Hello, I'm Mark DeLuzio. Over the past century, our constitutional republic, grounded in the rule of law, has been transformed into a tyrannical democracy, orchestrated by unelected bureaucrats and globalists. The Constitution is now treated as a suggestion, not the law of the land. Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God.
Hi, I'm Mark's co-host, Suzette Lawrence. Our intention is to explore the Constitution and discuss how our freedoms and constitutional rights are violated by those very politicians who took an oath on the Bible to uphold it. Learn how the Constitution is the solution to our country's problems. What do we need to do to restore our inalienable and enumerated rights? Class begins now.
Welcome to episode 30 of the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God. Today, we're very fortunate to have a candidate for Maricopa, that's Arizona for those of you in Rio Linda, Maricopa County Sheriff, running for Sheriff, Jerry Sheridan. And Jerry and I now have met each other. We've known each other for, this goes way back to, I think, last Tuesday. But it was really nice to meet Jerry. And I really liked what he had to say when I met him about his thoughts about the job of being a sheriff. We're going to talk a lot about that. And maybe some of the things that are not happening in this state and other places with the sheriff's department. And a lot of people are saying, hey, I'm constrained by federal law and the Constitution. Well, that's crap. And I think Jerry's going to shed some light on that in a big way. And the more I listen to Jerry talk, the more I'm saying we got to get this guy in. He was also Sheriff Joe's number one right-hand man for 24 years, as Sheriff Joe was Maricopa County Sheriff, and has a lot of great experience. And boy, I tell you, there's nobody on the planet, I think, that's better positioned for this job than Jerry. So, Jerry, it was really great to meet you. And maybe you want to fill in a little bit more background on your background, and then we got some interesting things to talk about. So turn it back over to you. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Mark. I really appreciate it, and it was very nice meeting and talking to you last week. So our long-term friendship, I hope, will continue.
So it will. It will.
Let me make this as quick as possible. I spent 40 years at the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, and I started out as a volunteer, as a reserve deputy sheriff at the age of 18. Back in 1977, you could be a sworn officer at the age of 18. It's since been raised to 21. But I did that. I worked in the jail for a short period of time in 1978, and I graduated as a deputy sheriff in March of 1979. It's been so long ago, I almost forgot. So I spent the next 40 years there, and it was a great ride. I loved going to work every day, no matter what I was doing, whether I was a detention officer in the jail working this, walking a cell block, or deputy sheriff walking down a dark alley at 3 o'clock in the morning by myself, because that's what deputies do. We don't have a lot of people around us like the municipal agencies do. So we have to rely on ourselves and our one beat partner or something like that. So notable of that period, I spent 33 of those 40 years in a leadership position with either stripes on my sleeve, a corporal and a sergeant, or a lieutenant or captain bars on my collar, or two or three stars on my collar. And it was a great job. And Joe Arpaio came in the last 24 years that I worked there. And he put the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office on the map. Mm-hmm. I'd worked for three sheriffs prior to that. And what I mean by he put it on the map is a lot of times people, you would help them. And I'd be like in the city of Phoenix, and I'd stop and help somebody give them a ride home if their car's broken down or something. And they would always, at the end of that, this is before Arpaio, I would say, hey, don't forget that the sheriff's office gave you a hand when you needed it. And they'd look at you like, Oh, you're the sheriff? I thought you were Phoenix PD. Well, no, the word sheriff on the side of the car and deputy sheriff on my sleeve, and I wear a brown and tan uniform and all that. People just weren't cognizant of what was the sheriff, what was the police. So when Joe Arpaio came along, he fixed that by making sure that people knew what his deputies and his detention officers were doing out there. And so that was something that I really loved about what he did for us as an organization. And he promoted me to captain in August of the year that he took over. A few years later, he promoted me to the chief over the patrol bureau. So I had the entire county. And just for your listeners that aren't familiar with Maricopa County, it's 9,224 square miles, and it's got 4.6 million people. It is a big county. It's threatening Harris County in Texas, which is in Houston, to be the third largest county, because right now Harris is third largest. But we're approaching them pretty quickly in population and all the other things that are going on, and crimes. And so,
by the way, Jerry, I looked it up the other day, and I think I knew this before, but I had to verify it. Maricopa County, population-wise, is bigger than, I believe, 23 or 24 states in our nation. That's how big it is, okay? Yeah. It's a real big deal to be the sheriff of a county, you know, this large with all the stuff that's going on.
Well, tell me about it. There's times on the campaign trail the last 20 months that it's taken me 2 hours to drive there from my house.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a big county. I've probably put 15 to 20,000 miles on my truck just during the campaign season. And so I did that for a while. I ran the patrol for the entire county. And then Sheriff Joe came to me one day and said, "Jerry, I want you to run the jails for me." And I'm like, you know, I'm thinking to myself, of course, you always tell the boss yes. But I was thinking to myself, the jails, oh my God, what a big job, because the jails are 75% of the sheriff's office. And the job he was handing me was something that really, to be honest with you, intimidated me, because the taxpayers just enacted, this was in 1998, a $1 billion sales tax to build new jails and to redo the system. So he basically put me in charge of it. And he looked at me and he goes, "Oh, you're not too happy about this, are you?" I said, "Well, I don't know, Sheriff. I, to be honest with you, I'm a little scared." And he says, "That's okay. I like the way you do things." And so I oversaw the design and construction of the Fourth Avenue Jail and the Lower Buckeye Jail. And just one of those jails is bigger than probably 98% of the county jail systems total across the country. And there's 3,300 sheriffs. And so to give your listeners an idea, when we built the new food factory, we built a freezer the size of a football field.
Wow.
We were serving, at that time, we were serving about 30,000 meals a day. It's a big operation. And there's constitutional issues, because 80% of the inmate population are unsentenced, which means in our criminal justice system, they're innocent. And so they have certain constitutional rights. It's not like a state prison where they're all convicted felons and some of their rights are set aside. So we had to deal, you know, with all those issues. I had to hire thousands of officers and all this. And little did I know that someday that I was going to run for sheriff, because we thought Sheriff Joe was going to be the sheriff forever. And that was our mindset. So I never really thought about sheriff back in those days. And I did that for 12 years. And one day in 2010, Sheriff came to me and he says, "Jerry," he said, "I need a new chief deputy and I want you to be it." And so I spent the last 6 years as his chief deputy. And the chief deputy runs the entire organization. And again, little did I know that I was going to run for sheriff someday. So it set me up so I can run that jail system like nobody else. And I know the ins and outs of running the sheriff's office. And, you know, from a political perspective, from a administrative perspective, and a practical, because I spent time in the jail as an officer. I spent 17 years in a patrol car. So I know this job. I could go there tomorrow. If I was elected today, I could go there tomorrow and begin to make changes. And the problem is, there's a lot of changes that need to be made. And the reason is because the last 7.5 years under a George Soros-funded sheriff who beat Joe Arpaio, Soros donated $2.3 million to get Arpaio out of office in 2016. And he became the sheriff. And he quit a year early in January of this year. So I'm not running against him. And so I am very confident that we'll get through this. And I put the time in. The last 20 months have been on hold, my personal life, to get this done. And so now we're working on raising money because I'm running against the Democrat. The Democrats fund their candidates. And so now the focus between now and November is to raise as much money as I can to get the word out to people that I haven't seen. You know, I've met tens of thousands of people, but there's over 2 million registered voters here in Maricopa County. And that's why this job is also so important, because I can do something. If there's election fraud, I can have it investigated and those kinds of things that the current administration refused to do. So that's important. And I understand all aspects of the job. You know, the sheriff, a lot of people don't realize this, but the sheriff is the only elected law enforcement official in the nation. Everyone else, police chiefs, the director of the FBI, you know, all the federal organ, they were all bureaucrats appointed by someone. The sheriff's the only one that's elected. And what that means is that the sheriff only reports to the people of that county. The sheriff doesn't report to the Board of Supervisors. The sheriff doesn't report to the governor. The sheriff doesn't report to the President of the United States. So that's what I always love about being a deputy sheriff, because I learned that from Sheriff Jerry Hill the day I graduated the police academy, as he told us that we were special because we were, and on the back of our ID cards, it said that we were to act as if he himself was present.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jerry, it's interesting you say that because, well, as you know, I'm pretty good friends with Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And he told me once, he said to me, Mark, he said, if this was an appointed position, I would have lasted 2 years as Maricopa sheriff, county sheriff. I would have lasted 2 years. He says, I would have been kicked out, but this is elected and the people elected him, you know? And so a lot of people may not understand around the country what the sheriff department means in Arizona relative to a lot of other counties and a lot of other states. Because here it is our backbone of law enforcement, along with the municipal police, but it's a lot different. I came from Connecticut, Ian. Yeah, we had sheriff, but what the sheriffs there did is serve warrants. That's all they did. They were court appointed, and they were not the law enforcement force that you see. And then people might say, well, geez, Mark, why do you have a sheriff on a constitutional podcast? Well, a couple of reasons. Well, first of all, we talked about the deep state. We talked about globalism in a previous episode and the Marxist agenda to take down our country. And then you just heard Jerry talk about George Soros spending $2.4 million to keep Sheriff Joe Arpaio out of that seat. Okay. I don't even need to explain, I don't think, why that was and how detrimental that was to our country. Why would you, as listeners, think Soros would spend that kind of money to get Penzone in on this, right? And here's a clue for you and Rhea Linda again. I love echoing Rush Limbaugh. It has to do with the border, okay? It has to do with fentanyl. It has to do with globalism. It has to do with drugs. It has to do with child trafficking. It has to do with all that stuff that the left, the far left, supports, okay? Whether they say it or not, they support it because their policies are driving that. So remember, we have an executive branch of this government, and their number one responsibility is to enforce the law. And Title 8 is the law that in question here relative to our borders and immigration, and it's just simply not being done, okay? And a lot of sheriffs, Jerry, I've heard tell me, and I won't name names, but in Arizona, Our hands are tied. We can't do anything about the border. Federal law and the Constitution prohibits us from doing anything. And what's your opinion of that?
Well, you know, let's go back to the Constitution, right? The Constitution gives the federal government basically two powers. Number one is to protect the country from invasions and, you know, the military, right? And that's the military. And the second thing is intrastate commerce. And so that part of the Constitution has been expanded and globalized to many things. And so all the other responsibilities were delegated to the states. It was the states, the people. That's why I love seeing We the People on the back of the windows in the cars and trucks here in Arizona, because they understand what that means. It's the people that the federal government should work for, and government together, all of it. And I understand that as somebody that's going to have a constitutional position as sheriff, that I report to those people. They're my bosses. And that has been lost for probably 150 years.
Yeah.
And so what has happened is the federal government has realized that, oh, wow, we can push the people around. And if you remember right, when the Founding Fathers wrote the Constitution and the first and the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, they had just got done basically kicking the king out of the United States and putting together and making the United States of America. And so a lot of people have forgotten that. It's not taught in school. It's not taught in law school. Maybe they get a couple hours, lawyers in law school, get a little snippet of constitutional law. But then these lawyers go on to be judges in the state level and in the federal level. And so that's why we've gotten away from what the Constitution really means. And it's the state's right. And, thank God for Texas and pushing against the federal government and letting them enforce the immigration issues. And so here in Arizona is the problem, Mark. You know, we have a liberal Democrat for governor. We have a liberal Democrat for attorney general. And there is no way that Arizona would back, stand, or take the position that Texas did. So what's the sheriff's authority in all that? Well, the sheriff can enforce the law. It's that clear. What we need is a law here in Arizona. And if you remember right, that was passed by our legislature, and the governor didn't sign it, to make it illegal to cross the border. A state law, so the sheriffs could enforce that. And so that's basically where we're at now. And so as part of this discussion, I have to also tell you that the sheriff gets the position of sheriff is in the Arizona Constitution. The sheriff gets his authority from 11441. It's the Arizona Revised Statute. And there's a bunch of duties and responsibilities in there. But the sheriff gets his power from the people.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if I was to take on a constitutional issue, right? And if I walk out on the federal courthouse steps and I'm standing there by myself or one or two people behind me, they will eat me for lunch. But if I do that and I have thousands of people standing behind me, that's where the sheriff, and they would not take me on. That's where the sheriff gets power from, we the people. And, I hope I don't have to take on the federal government, but I'm also prepared because there's a lot of things going on. I am hoping and praying that President Trump gets reelected. That's the way I call it. And he's going to put in the right people in this administration. Tom Homan, former ICE director under President Trump. I've met with him a couple times. He came out here and help me do a town hall in Phoenix. And
he is awesome, by the way. He is awesome. I love the way he makes mincemeat out of these woke liberal keep calling them liberal. They're progressives. These Marxist. Congress people. They're Marxist. Well, you know, progressive sounds really neat. You're above the fray. You're advanced. Mm-hmm. You have a vision of things that you little people don't have. You know what a progressive means? It means you're a worshiper of Woodrow Wilson, who is the father of the progressives, which means you have a disdain for our Constitution. That's what a progressive, they don't believe in the Constitution. That's what a progressive means. I love the names they come up with this thing, you know, but, and let's go back to the 10th Amendment. You mentioned the Bill of Rights. Anything not delegated by the people to the federal government is left to the people, to the states, or to the people. Okay, because when the states don't do their job, then the people take over. So how does that tie into this whole business about posses?
Oh, posses. You mentioned the posses. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of things that need to be done. And before I answer that question, I got to set the stage for people. And that is the sheriff's office is supposed to have a little over 4,000 employees. It's got a $532 million budget this year. And right now, though, there's about 1,200 to 1,300. I can't get the exact number. It's hard to get it. I'm not, people short. And so in the jails, there are about 900 officers short. Patrol staffing is about 50%. And the sheriff's office right now is not keeping people safe.
Hey, and Arizona, Arizona residents listening to this, how do you feel about that? That we're, what'd you say, 1,300 short or so? How do we feel about that, guys? You know, think about that. That to me is malpractice. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. So we had, Sheriff Joe and I, we had a posse of 1,600 people, citizens, that gave up their time and their money because they had to buy their uniform, their firearms, and everything. The only thing we gave them was a can of pepper spray and as many bullets as they needed to fill their magazines, right? So maybe 45, maybe a box of ham. That's it. And so when this Soros guy came in, he did away with the posse. He fired them all, every one of them, and then made them reapply. And, you know, currently today, this is August of 2024. There's maybe 35 posse members out there. Wow. And they were force multipliers. You know, they would ride in as a second man in the car with a deputy. They would run jail wagons. And what that means is a deputy sheriff, let's say in Fountain Hills, for example, it's an outlying community on the other side of Scottsdale, contracts with the sheriff for law enforcement. So if a deputy arrested somebody in Fountain Hills, the posse would come pick up the prisoner, take the drive, an hour drive downtown, wait 2 hours to get him booked, and the hour drive. So instead of the deputy being out of his beat for 4 hours, he was still there protecting the people.
Nice.
And, you know, it was they did a lot more than that, believe me. We could spend a whole segment of time talking about the value of the posse. And they were vetted. They were trained. They were probably the most dedicated volunteers you'll ever find anywhere because they cared about their community and they wanted to help the sheriff's office keep it safe. Now, I hate to correct you in front of your listeners, but you said a word early on in your introduction. You called it the sheriff's department. It's not a department. A department means that it would be subordinate to the board of supervisors.
Yeah, good point. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. The sheriff's office is the office of the sheriff and it's the office of the people.
No, that's
so don't do that again.
I will not make that mistake again because you're going to become sheriff and I could just see you pulling me over and give me a ticket for no good reason. So,
well, no, because you said department. That's
it's a new violation that you're going to put into the statutes.
That's right.
But no, good point. Thank you very much for that. And, so let me ask you, I mean, we know the board is a big deal, but this might be a dumb question for me to ask, but what do you think the biggest issue is? Because you mentioned a couple issues here, and a lot of them having to do with aren't to do with crime. It's how we're prepared to fight crime from the sheriff's office, right?
Yeah.
So that's really, you know, I mean, you got to get your ducks in a row to be in and clean up what this Marxist sheriff did to our, right, not only to our county and to our state, but to our country.
I have three big issues, so don't limit me to just one, okay? Because they're all equally serious, and that affects the public safety.
Yep.
And so number one is the retention and recruitment of employees, okay? I cannot do my job. We cannot fulfill our responsibilities to the community if we don't have the people. And so retention and recruitment. And believe it or not, I have some friends that have very successful international businesses. They have recruitment issues themselves. For example, one of these guys, what he does, he buys companies that are on the verge of, you know, going up, you know, going out of business. And he frequently has to hire employees. And so I've been talking to him about it. I've been talking to another guy who's a headhunter. And so I've got some ideas. And I'll tell you how bad this current administration has been on recruiting and retaining people. Is in August of last year, I was invited by the FLE, which is the Phoenix Police Union, to go to a retention and recruitment seminar. I was the only MCSO command staff there, and I don't even work there anymore. Nobody. They sent nobody to this. There were police chiefs, lieutenants, captains in charge of personnel from just about all the other 25 municipal agencies, and MCSO has the biggest problem, and they sent nobody. So, again, this is how the left does business. They destroy things. Now, if I was a conspiracy theorist, which I'm not, but I'll throw this out there. Boy, it sure was a way to defund the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office by this George Soros-funded guy without anybody even noticing. Think about that. So I'm already working on that. That's number one. Number two is Maricopa County is not a border county with Mexico. However, there's some parts of Maricopa County that are 40 miles from the Mexican border, but probably the most common way that drugs come in through Maricopa County is through the Vehicle Valley down by I-8 off by Gila Bend. And when I became the chief deputy in 2010, I put deputies, detectives out in the desert on the hilltops with spotting scopes, fighting the drug cartels and the drug smugglers and the human sex trafficking and all that stuff out in the desert. We had chase vehicles down below. We had a helicopter. Matter of fact, we were so successful, the Border Patrol came and started to help us and do all that. And within a week of this George Soros guy coming in, he disbanded them. And I just recently found out from two of the detectives that were on that detail that they had cases. There was three cases that they were ready to file drug charges, drug smuggling charges on three big cartel members, but they needed another week or 2 weeks worth of work before they could get submitted. Pennzone didn't let them finish those cases, and they were never reassigned to another detective. They never got prosecuted. Wow. So that's the kind of sheriff we've been dealing with here in this county for the last 7 years. So we absolutely need to go in there and have somebody that really cares about the public safety. Because when you talk about drugs, you know, six people a day die in Maricopa County of drug overdoses. Four of those are related to fentanyl. Now, a recent story in the paper and people in the media, now that Pennzone quit, they're starting to bring out some of these problems that he had in his organization. And they've had over 300 deaths in the jail system since I left. 300 people dying in custody. There's a problem. You know who Bernie Kerik is? He was the Rudy Giuliani's police commissioner.
Great guy.
I met with him in January. Before he was the police commissioner, he ran Rikers Island.
Ah,
right? And so when I told him they were averaging 40 to 49 deaths a year in this jail system, he about fell out of his chair. He said, Jerry, he said, when I ran Rikers Island, if we had 10 deaths in a year, the federal government was all over us. So think about that for a second. People didn't seem to care, but it's the sheriff's job to keep people safe. And that includes the people under his care, custody, and control. And I know how to do that. Because when I was in charge, we had about, we averaged about 7 deaths a year. I thought that was 7 too many, to be honest with you. But we had a very low suicide rate, one of the lowest in the country. And we very rarely had an overdose death. I can't even think of one, but I'm not going to say we didn't because I don't know. But it was minimal. And in the 18 years, I oversaw those jail systems. We maybe had 2 or 3 homicides. They had, this administration had 5 homicides in a 6-week period back in October 22. Wow. And again, nobody's been paying attention, the media, nothing. Is it because he's, you know, on their side of the team? You know, I don't really care anymore. That's ancient history. What I need to do is get in there and start fixing these things. And, you know, that was the third thing, is the jail, because of the drugs coming into the jail. And it's the sheriff's job to keep everybody in this county safe, including those inmates.
Well, you know, you talked about the Constitution. What does a constitutional sheriff mean to you?
It's very simple. The sheriff is there to protect the rights, the freedoms, and liberties that our founding fathers gave us. Period. The civil rights of all people in Maricopa County. And see, that's the thing. I know Democrats fear that word constitutional, right? But constitutional, the Constitution protects everyone. And especially in law enforcement, politics should not enter into what you do. The party, the color, the sex, the gamut, the race, all of that. Law enforcement should enforce the law and the rule of law. And the rule of law to me also means that you apply the law equally to everyone. Simple. Again, the rule of law scares the left. Constitution scares the left. And my comment is, no. The sheriff is there to protect people's civil rights and liberties. And a good, best example is when in 2020, we had mask mandates, we had rules coming down from the governor or the county on closing restaurants, parks, churches. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And the sheriff then, again, the George Soros funded guy, he set up a hotline to snitch on your fellow citizen if they go to church or if they have their restaurant open. But a constitutional sheriff would say, no, governor, no, board of supervisors. You don't have the authority to take those civil liberties away from people and mandate a mask. Mandate.
God bless you.
And all the other things that go along with it. So there's a great example that I like to use also. There's a, if you remember a few months back, the governor in New Mexico wanted to declare the city of Albuquerque a health risk zone because of the gun violence. And she mandated that you could not carry a firearm within the city of Albuquerque. Well, the sheriff there in Bernalillo County stood up and said, no, governor, that is unconstitutional. You cannot do that. That's what I believe is the duty, the responsibility of every sheriff to protect those constitutional rights of the people. And on the Second Amendment, and this might be where politics comes in, you know, Democrats don't like the Second Amendment. I love the Second Amendment. That's why we moved to Arizona when I was 18 from New York City. My dad retired as a lieutenant with New York City PD. And I asked him, I said, why are we moving to Arizona, Dad? And he says, well, because they have great gun laws out there. And so here we are.
I like your father.
You know, you'd love him. He's 93. He lives here. If he could see or hear, I'd put him on camera with us. But he can't see or hear very well. He was in the Marine Corps back during the Korean War.
Oh, boy.
And so they didn't wear hearing aids back then. So hearing protection. Yeah. So he wears hearing aids now if he puts them in. And if you live with an older person, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So all of this is going on. And it's the sheriff's responsibility. There's no doubt about it. And politics should not weigh in.
Well, Jerry, you know, I'm so glad you said that. I'm so glad you brought that up, because so many people have this notion that an executive order is law. Okay. And you're right. The governor does not have the right to tell you can only have 10 people in your restaurant or at a funeral or in a church. And, you know, people just accept it because I think, and this is the reason we're doing this podcast, that people are so ill-informed about their rights. And it's so refreshing to hear somebody running for office who understands, because I have to argue that even most politicians do not understand half of what you just said about our constitutional rights. And these
I
are the
will
guys
answer
that, oh my God, yeah.
Yeah. I will answer that. Most sheriffs don't. Most all police officers don't. Mm-hmm. Because if remember, I was absolutely disgusted. I don't remember where it was, maybe South Carolina, someplace back there, where they had closed the park. And there was a man out there on a Sunday afternoon with his daughter and their dog. And the police officers came out there and arrested this guy for being in a park by himself, because the mandate was to close the park. And that is the most disgusting thing to me, because all of us, we take that oath to protect the Constitution of the United States of America and in here in Arizona, and the constitutional laws of the state of Arizona. And we all do that to our best. And that means protecting people's constitutional rights. And all elected officials take a very similar oath. It's just worded a little different, but we all basically pledge allegiance to the Constitution. And for police officers to do that, because they work, most of them in the municipalities these days are run by Democrats, the cities, even here in Red Arizona, they are run by Democrats. And the city manager hires the police chief. And the police chief most likely is a Democrat. And here in Phoenix, we've got a problem. You know, the Department of Justice came after Phoenix Police Department, and they've been under investigation about a year and a half. And so basically they forced out the former police chief, and she'd grown up in Phoenix PD and came up through the ranks and eventually became the police chief. And they pushed her out, and they brought in a guy, a police chief from Baltimore, who has dealt with the Department of Justice before and acquiesced to all of them. So I'm very scared for the Phoenix Police Department and the citizens of Phoenix, which is in my county, by the way, or our county, let me put it that way, which is in our county, because they are going to do what they do, and that is take over through using a monitor, take over the Phoenix Police Department, the federal government. And that is disgusting to me. But I can see that train is coming down the tracks in a full head of steam. And I don't think there's any way to divert it at this point. Unless, Mark, we get a new president in January and he replaces all these Marxists in the federal government that are tearing this country apart and have been for what, the last 7 years?
You know, we're
so
losing
we
it.
need
We're losing
the
it
last,
from within.
the last, excuse me, the last 4 years. Yeah, we need to get this fixed.
Yeah, we're losing it from within. And I argue that we're probably have been losing it ever since Woody Wilson took over in 1913. And if you follow the track of the foundation, and we have a couple episodes on this, that he laid the foundation for all the Marxists to follow. He was a stooge. All the industrials put him in, like a lot of presidents are put in as stooges to do the bidding of the guys like Soros and people like that, the Klaus Schwabs and all those other clowns that are trying to run the world. And, you know, you start looking at all of the transgressions that have happened. You just can't keep track of them. And people are so distracted. They're missing the point that there's an overarching Marxist agenda trying to take down our country. And I'm glad to hear President Trump start using the M word. And I'm glad to hear you use it.
Oh, yeah. I don't use the word democracy. I use the word republic.
Republic.
We
have an old episode on that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I also read Saul Alinsky's book, Rules for Radicals, about 4 months ago.
Yep.
And if you think that you and I are nuts and these right wing, you know, no. What we are, we're realists, and we can see what's happening in front of us with this Marxist regime. And, you know, I hope and pray that the popularity of Harris is just a short bump in the road, because, you know, before they mentioned that she was going to be the presidential candidate, she had lower approval ratings than Biden did. And now all of a sudden, everybody's rallying around. Well, they're just so fighting so hard because they know that President Trump will come in here, clean house, take care of business. And I can't wait for that to happen. And for me, from a law enforcement perspective, we need to get back to the rule of law. We need to get back to holding people accountable if they break the law, period. End of story. And, you know, one of the other things back in 2020, the sheriff, one of the duties and responsibilities of the sheriff, and it's the third one in line, is to basically protect the public from riots and affrays. And if you remember back in 2020, here in Phoenix alone, and that's what I'm most familiar with, is they hit Fashion Square in Scottsdale, caused millions of dollars worth of damage, and they did the same thing in downtown Phoenix. Well, the sheriff had hundreds of deputies ready to go and never deployed them. And I know that because I had deputies call me in Scottsdale and in Phoenix. I said, "Hey, chief, we're here and we're ready to go, but nobody's deploying us, and they're tearing down, they're setting things on fire, they're breaking windows, they're looting and all this stuff." And so what a sheriff should do is go to the police chief and say, "Hey, chief, you need some help. You want some help with this?" "No, we're not going to do anything. We're going to stand down." And then the sheriff should say, "You know what, chief? I really hate to have to do this, but it's my duty to suppress riots. And if you don't do something in 10 minutes, I will." And so I was even prepared. Some people say, "Well, what would you do? How would you disperse a crowd and all this stuff?" Well, I learned of a product they call it skunk water. They use it very effectively in Israel. And basically you shoot it out of a water cannon and it covers people with water that smells like sewage. And it's disgusting. And it stays on you for days. And so as soon as they see the water cannon coming in Israel, now people know well enough that they're going to get the hell out of there because you can't get away from it. And so I bought some of that stuff back in 2020. We did a little demonstration here. I've got 5 acres on my little ranch. I call it a ranch. But so we've got all that going on. And That's how I would do it. And that's what I would, how I would deal with the police chiefs. I don't want to step on their toes. It's not my job to make their life miserable, but it's my job to keep the citizens, all 4.6 million, whether they voted for me or not, whether they hate me or love me, it's my job to protect every darn one of them.
Well, it's music to my ears because that, you know, without law, I think one of the founding fathers said that without law and order, nothing works. You can't commence commerce. You can't run the government. You can't do anything. And we just have let our guards down on law and order. And it's all by design. I'm not thinking this is incompetence. None of this, to me, is incompetence. And, you know, when you look at the Supremacy Clause in the Constitution, it does say, yeah, the federal law is the law of the land, pursuant thereof, pursuant that it's in concert with the Constitution. And so there's so many laws right now that are unconstitutional, so many agencies that are unconstitutional. And you look at the oath that you mentioned that you take and that our representatives here in Arizona, for example, take and all around the country, very similar oath to be beholden to the Constitution, protect our rights and all that, right? They don't have, and we have an episode on this somewhere back about nullification. And we have an episode that talks about it's not the representatives' right to nullify an unconstitutional law. It's their obligation to do so. And that's kind of what you're talking about here, which I love. I love to hear that. You know, I got to run something by.
Before you go on, okay,
sure.
I'm going to use a different word, okay?
Sure.
Because it's the legislature that nullifies. It's the sheriff that interposes, okay? So if I have a citizen of my county that's saying, hey, there's no signatures on this search warrant. The FBI is trying to serve on my house. I would drive out there and take a look. And if that is not done according to the Constitution, signed by a magistrate, right? That's what it says, right? In the Fourth Amendment. I can interpose myself, which basically I stand between my citizen and the federal government and say,
yep.
You're done here. And that's what a sheriff should do.
That's awesome.
For her citizens.
That is awesome. And you know, I think there was a state somewhere, and I don't know where it was, maybe up north, where the I think that it was either the not the governor, but somebody else in government that said, maybe it was a mayor that said, if the FBI comes in or any police come in and try to enforce a mask mandate and arrest people thereof, we will incarcerate them. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that crap happened and it stopped overnight. It's just stopped, right? Which right. is what you got to do.
Right. And the sheriff can do that as long right. as he's got the power from the people that will support them when they do that. Because you can imagine the federal government is not going to take that sitting down.
Right? No, no.
But if you have the power of the people behind you, that's where great things can be done.
You don't have any brothers, do you? I mean, that can do this too, right? I mean, we need you in there, man, because our
brother...
Every day.
I do have a brother, and he's a surgeon. I don't think he want to be the sheriff. You know, the funny thing about being a sheriff, it pays peanuts compared to the city police, police chiefs. Yeah. You know, sheriff's salary here in Arizona is $101,000 a year, and you know the police chiefs make probably $250,000, $300,000 a year for a job that really they only have the law enforcement side. And I say only, but I'm comparing that to the responsibilities of the sheriff that has the jail system, which is 75% of the sheriff's office, and all these other responsibilities given to him by the legislature. So the sheriff's job is very complicated. And some people say it's difficult, but to me, running for sheriff has been the difficult part, not being the sheriff, because I spent 40 years doing it. I know the workings of all the nuts and bolts of MCSO. I know where all the skeletons are hidden. I know what needs to be done. And I can't wait to get there. November can't come soon enough for me. And
I was going to say, yeah.
I don't like to wish one day in my life away, because that's one thing I learned, in a patrol car. Don't waste a minute, because you never know when your number's up. You know, whether it was a car accident victim or a murder victim or, somebody that just died suddenly of a heart attack. Every one of those people, they had no idea today was the day. And so I walked away from that lesson as a young man, realizing that I'm going to make the most of every day of my life. I'm not going to be depressed about it. And it's probably a good thing we don't know when our number's up. But we're going to take care of business. I hope to be the sheriff here and start working on these things we talked about. Another issue is a big thing with people, and this is across the spectrum, the political spectrum, is animal cruelty. Because it's not only is it, those animals rely on us like an infant, right, and for the care and their well-being, but also, if you're abusing your animals, you're abusing your family too. And in a lot of cases, and statistics have shown. And nobody in this county, out of the 25 municipal agencies, has a unit dedicated to animal cruelty. And so I will bring that back. We had a very successful, we had four detectives and a civilian investigator that took care of these animal cruelty cases. And there's been some disgusting things that people do to animals, and they walk because they don't really get. They don't get caught. They don't get an investigation done. And subsequently, don't get prosecuted. So I'm going to take care of that too.
Nothing drives me more crazy when something innocent, like an animal, a child, an older person, or is defenseless, gets abused. I can't even tell you what goes through my mind when I see something like that. Let me throw something by. I heard this on the radio, I don't know, it was a couple months ago, on one of the talk shows here in Phoenix. They were interviewing a town councilwoman in Phoenix. And again, I don't remember her name. But I did want to put my hand through the radio and rip her throat out, okay? She said, they're short on police. And I don't know if you know the number in the Phoenix Police Department, but they're short on police just like the sheriffs are short on officers and sheriffs, but they're down considerably. Okay, and so the commentator on the radio asked her, "Well, why wouldn't you reach out to some retired veterans who know how to use a gun, have seen battle before, have been shot at? Why wouldn't you?" She said, "Here's her answer." She said, "Oh no, they're far too violent. We're trying to recruit out of our community colleges to get somebody with a criminal justice degree." Okay. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with bringing somebody in like that, but her whole notion that somebody who's experienced, who's been, battle tested, and she wants to go to a community college to bring somebody. I mean, what's next? Safe bullets that don't hurt you? I mean, I just heard that and I said, like, you gotta be kidding me. You gotta be kidding me. These are the guys that went over. And, I have the utmost respect, and I said this on another podcast. I was on Elsa Kurtz's, Kurtz podcast. She's a lady that imitates Kamala Harris, right? And her and I became friends. She was on mine, and I was on hers. And I said, my definition of a hero, it used to be Carl Yastrzemski. I used to, live in Connecticut and idolize Carl Yastrzemski. I mean, if I have his sign bat up on my wall right now. But he's not a hero. The people that are heroes to me are the people like you and your deputies and your sheriffs and the military and fire and police that don't know when they leave the home in the morning, you don't know if they're coming home that night. That to me is my litmus test. That's my definition, okay? I know everybody has different definitions. My definition, if you don't know if that person is going to be back that night or whenever, okay, because they've got a job that is putting their ass on the line for so little pay, as you mentioned, okay, that not everybody's cut out to do that. But to me, the people that sacrifice themselves for the safety and well-being of others, to me, is my definition of a hero.
Yes, I agree. You know, one of the most dangerous activities that a law enforcement officer, and I'm going to, just so you know, I'm going to call my deputies peace officers, because that's really what we are. So the most dangerous thing that they'll do, and the one of the most frequent things they'll do, is pull somebody over to write
a
ticket.
Yeah.
And because they know who you are walking up, and you certainly don't know who they are, and all that. And just right down here by where I live, a quarter of a mile, I remember, and it was in August, it was hot. There was a highway patrolman I knew for 20 years that he pulled a car over, pulled him over right here by my house. My dad was home at the time. He actually heard the gunshot. He got shot and killed, walking up to a car. Little did he know that guy had just murdered two people and was trying to get back to California. And seeing him laying there in his uniform, I mean, it was something that every time I pass by that monument we've got here, every time I go into town, I see that and I think about it. So, yeah, it is. And those are the people. I'm not, you know, the last 20 years of my career, I sat behind a desk other than, you know, going out and seeing the deputies and in the jail. But it's those people that are out there that are doing it every day. And don't forget, when you mention police officers, deputy sheriffs, firefighters, EMS people, please include the people that work in the jails and prisons.
Really good point.
They are one of the most important parts of the criminal justice system, because they're the end game. That's where people go to be kept away from society. So it's a very important role that they play. They always get the least amount of respect and the least amount of pay, to be honest with you, compared to others in the criminal justice system.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's a good point. Yeah, you know, Jerry, I'll have to send you a couple of poems I wrote about law enforcement and about heroes. But I wrote one recently. We had in Connecticut a state police trooper, young guy with a family and everything, beautiful wife, who was killed on a traffic stop. Okay. And I wrote this poem for his wife and a friend of mine who was really good friends with him, the guy that got killed, state police trooper Pelletier. And this has happened a couple months ago. But one, I want to read one of the verses of the poem. I'll send you the whole thing, but this one verse. What did I do with it? A disrespect to all who lay risk to their lives. Every call, a perilous scene. I loathe the press when they get it wrong. Traffic stops are never routine.
Mm-hmm. So true.
Right. Yep. And when I hear press say, oh, it was a routine traffic stop. Yeah, well, you go freaking do it. See how routine it is. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, and by the way, when I do get pulled over for speeding sometimes, I just got pulled over in Iowa. I was going a little fast, but when the two sheriffs came to my door, to my car, I didn't have any keys. It was like, you know, one of those keyless cars. Normally I put the keys up on the thing, but I put my hands up on the wheel, my two hands on the steering wheel. And so they saw my two hands.
Right.
And then they came from the other side and looked in and, you know, very cautious, the other guy standing behind them. And, you know, and then they saw I wasn't a threat and all that stuff. Then I dropped Sheriff Joe's name, but but they gave me a warning.
You wrote you two tickets.
Exactly. No, but you know, I do respect everything you do, and it's funny because not funny, but when my grandson turned 10 years old, he was at I took him to the hockey game down in Phoenix to see the Coyotes play, and that particular night they had all the Star Wars characters out in the lobby, and he said, "Hey, Poppy, can we go get our pictures taken with Star Wars characters?" I says, yes, we can. I said, but first, we got two guys we got to go get our pictures taken with first. And there are two police officers standing there, right? So I went over to them. Hey, you guys mind if we take a picture with my grandson? I'm trying to teach them to respect law enforcement and all that, you know, that type of stuff, and military and all that. And they were like shocked, first of all. It was like, holy cow, that this doesn't happen to us, right? So we took the picture, you know. And then I said to these two guys, I said, hey, guys, I really appreciate it. I said, but I got to tell you something. Star Wars characters are better looking than you two slugs. And they just started laughing. You know, they had a blast, you know. We had a lot of fun, you know, we had a lot of fun. But I am trying to teach our kids, my grandkids, which I taught my sons as well, about how important law enforcement is and the people that risk their ass for us, and to respect them and to understand their whole position in terms of what they go through, the scrutiny, the potential lawsuits, the danger that's obviously, well, maybe not obvious to all. And I don't know, when I see that the police, and look, I know in every group there's bad apples. I got that, right? And it doesn't matter what. Okay, I got that. But you don't paint the whole freaking thing with one stroke of the brush. I mean, you know, I mean, the people that are doing this, thank God God put people on the earth to do this kind of stuff for us. Boy, nobody, most people won't stand up and do that. Do your job. I'm sorry. They won't.
No. And, you know, I was looking at some salaries for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and I saw one of the players makes $2.6 million a year to play a game. And I always think about, you know, our peace officers out there, firefighters, and, you know, what they get paid is nothing. And then I think about the people that work in the jails and the prisons, and the you know, they took away three years ago, the state legislature, without a peep from the sheriffs, they took away the detention officers, the corrections officers, 25-year retirement. And they just put money in the 401k for them. Well, you know, the 401k, that's garbage right now with all the inflation and things going on. And so how are you going to recruit people? So, you know, that's one of the things I need to work on, is getting with the legislature, using the power of the sheriff to have them change that back to 25-year retirement. I need to work with, again, the power of the sheriff to get the Board of Supervisors to approve and act a dedicated pay plan for all MCSO employees, because we're the only law enforcement agency in the county that doesn't have a pay plan. So you can, what that means is you could be a 19-year detention officer, deputy sheriff, and not be topped out in pay. While most police agencies are 6 to 9 years.
Well, yeah.
You know, so these are the kinds of things that I'm going to need to work on. You asked before, there's a million of them, but, you know, as they come to mind as we talk, they're on my list of things that I need to get done, but I need to get there first. And we're probably coming up to the end, right? We've been talking for over an hour already. I don't know if you noticed that, but I did.
No, when you're having a good conversation, time flies. So I didn't notice it, but okay, Jerry.
We've only scratched the surface.
Yeah, no, I know. Too. I know. Well, so, maybe that means we have to have you back. You know,
yeah.
I really think it's a lot to talk about, and hopefully someday you're going to write a book or two. But of all the things that you've seen over the years, I got to believe there is stories upon stories. But, you know, it's so refreshing to me to hear somebody talk about the Constitution in their framework of what they're going to be doing. You're going to win. And I want to just let you know that you're always welcome to come back on. And you're also, if you ever need my help personally on anything that you're working on, I'm even cheaper than your salary. I'll come for nothing.
No, very good. Well, you know, I could use a, you know, what did Soros gave? You get $2.3 million. So if you're offering that to help me get elected, that would be great. I could take your $2.3 million. That would be awesome.
Yeah. I'm going to write the check. I'll write the check today.
Okay.
And okay. We'll see how that works. And then you'll probably come in a restaurant for bouncing a check.
Yeah. So maybe, and here's my pitch. Okay. The Democrats fund their candidates.
Right.
They don't play games. And I tell this to just about every Republican crowd that I've talked to in the last 20 months, Republicans are cheap. You have a candidate that you like and support. Damn it, open your wallet, spend $20, $50, $100 right. bucks, $6,650, which is the max an individual can give, and send it to them because they need that money to advertise and all that. And, you know, me, I don't spend it to put gas in my truck, and I've probably driven 15 to 20,000 miles. And I get 15 miles to a gallon. So you can figure out what it's cost me out of my own pocket every week, $150 to $200. And that's okay. That's my part of my contribution, plus my time, obviously. But do that and make sure you do that. And, you know, we as candidates, we make it easy. You can go to my website, Sheridan, number four, sheriff2024.com. And there's links on every page to donate. And makes it very easy. It's not as easy as buying something on Amazon, but it's close. And please do that.
I've already done it. It's easy. And I'll tell you, we'll make sure we get that label across the screen for you as well. We'll get your website up there as well. But I implore you to do that because, and by the way, the earlier the better. I've run for office before, Jerry, as you know, and you need the money now. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's not like, I'll do it a week before the election. You need it now in order to generate the things you need to do to get known, to get your message out. It's all about communication and all that. And so don't hesitate. Like Jerry said, after you watch this, go right. You're on a computer already when you're watching this, go right to that website and do your thing. So
that'd be great. And you know, everybody talks about the elections November 5th. Well, it is. But that's the final day. And here in Arizona, which 80% of people in Maricopa County vote from early ballots.
Right.
They get dropped in the mail October 9th.
Right.
Well, it's September. It's August, what, 13th today? That's 6 weeks away. So you're right. Time is of the essence. Please, if you think about it, do it. And not just for me, but do it for all the candidates that you like. You know, from the President Trump on down and your city council, your board of supervisors, the local right. level, the school boards, right. you know, the school boards, the ones that are teaching our kids. We got to get these people that are teaching them DEI and all this crazy stuff. And let's get back to school boards teaching reading, write, arithmetic, and the history of this country and the Constitution.
Yeah, the right history. The right history.
The right history.
So, exactly. Jerry, this has been great. I really appreciate you coming on the show. Again, anytime, you're more than welcome. You want to pop on and talk about whatever you want to talk about, just, you know, my number. And I really am looking forward to you winning and then cleaning up this county because it has turned into a mess. Okay, by the way, I live in North Scottsdale. I can look outside my back door and see the house across the street in my backyard. I have about 2 acres here. Mm-hmm. There was a kidnapping there. There was a kidnapping there. They took the guy. Mm-hmm. He brought some woman home. They broke in. They kidnapped him, took him to the ATM. As they're discussing what they're going to do with his body, the speed camera went off down on Pima Road, and it took a picture of the guy driving the car, so they decided not to kill the guy. Okay? So that happened right here in this very nice, I have a Major League Baseball player that lives the street over in my complex, plays for San Francisco. And, you know, we live in a very nice area. So crime is impervious to you. You're not protected no matter where you are. You think you're in a gated community? You don't think they can get in? You don't think that you think you're protected? No. It doesn't matter where you are. It's here. And that was a wake-up call that right behind me, we have a kidnapping, okay? And then all kinds of robberies too, by the way, as you know, from a South American gang that they had going on up here. So we had all kinds of robberies around here. I put up cameras around my house. I've got 6 cameras, 2 inside, 6 outside. spotlights that go on. My idea is to keep people away from my house. I don't want them to come in, because if they come in, they will go out horizontally. They will not go out vertically. So I don't want that to happen. And so the whole idea is, when they see my house, they don't want my house. They want to go somewhere else. So that's my idea anyway. But Jerry, thanks a lot. We'll catch up with you again. And this has been more than a pleasure to get to know you. And our relationship going forward will be a long-time relationship, and I look forward to that.
That's great. Thank you, Mark, so much, and everybody for listening. And get out there and make sure you vote, because you've got to vote. If you don't like somebody on the ticket or the top of the ticket, whatever, hold your nose and vote down the Republicans, because we cannot have the Marxist Democrats. They're not the Democrats of my grandfather. My grandfather was a Democrat.
No.
But they're not that party anymore. No. And we need to vote Republican. And let's turn this country around one vote at a time. Thanks, Mark.
God bless you, my friend.
You too.
Thanks for listening to The Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, where we hold that strict adherence to the Constitution is the solution to most of our country's problems.
You can find other episodes on our website at 1787solution.com, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other platforms. We're your hosts, Mark DeLuzio and Suzette Lawrence. Until next time, may God bless you, and may God bless America.